Okay. So what I, apart from jokes, what I wanted to tell you is an old work of mine, which is about 10 years old. But in these 10 years, I didn't do much about this subject, so I decided to give you a better glimpse of what I was doing in the intervening years, and to avoid the impression that in these 10 years I didn't do anything at all. So here is the list, what came to me this morning, what I was doing. So mostly I was working on nuclear physics, on static property of nuclei, which is territories, chromosome territories, and the thing which is called nuclear chromodynamics, which would be a good title for this institute, but it's the dynamics of chromatin. Now, it is related also to activity generated phase separation, which is hypothesized to be behind the difference between heterochromatin and euchromatin. And I will not explain anything, but if anyone wants, I am open to discuss any of these subjects. And topology of polymer rings, RNA viruses, which is somehow related to these rings, electrophoresis and detection of knots in DNA using nanopores, some type of stochastic machines which you obtain if you operate in the presence of non-conservative force fields. And finally, the question of why evolution does not like to have knots in proteins. Apparently, it does not, and so it's an interesting question. But mostly, I will be speaking about all the work of which the leading author is right here, Ida Kassel. And this work, apart from the fact that Ida was citing it generously several times, it was only cited 3 times as of yesterday, including some obscure proceedings of a meeting in Warsaw. So I think it's an achievement. So I, and honestly, from purely aesthetic point of view, I like this work. I think there is something to it. So I decided to give it a second chance, maybe by telling you about it. In fact, Ida and I, Ida actually applied it, these ideas several times, but I was a part of this work, where we also applied this idea, so I will mention this a little bit too. But mostly I will give you some idea what is this polymer population mapping. And the history of this work is quite funny. I was invited to give a seminar in the Rockefeller, it was probably 2005, I guess, something like this. And as every speaker of every seminar, I had a schedule, and I was going from one person to another, talking to them. And when I came to Ida, Ida told me about his work. He was then, I guess, a postdoc, right, with Stan Laidler, and they worked on some problem related to populations. And he told me about the mathematical model, and I was, I would say, suspiciously susceptible to it. I was somehow able to understand it much faster than expected. And they, of course, suspected that I somehow hijacked their passwords and looked through their files and so on and so forth. And we discussed why I was able to understand it so easily. Turns out that some polymers, polymer models, which I knew from my previous life, were very similar mathematically. And essentially, at that, I think at the evening, we already had this paper pretty much ready. So this is what I want to tell you about. So this is their paper in Science in 2005, and the question that they wanted to address is the following. If the environment in which organisms live fluctuates in time, then these organisms may have one of two strategies. Either they maintain some mechanics to monitor the environment, to measure it, to measure temperature or salinity or whatever physical properties of the environment, and then to react accordingly. And this is an expensive mechanism to do that. Another possibility would be to stochastically switch every organism from one mode to another. And then, yes, of course, there is a chance that you will lose if you switch in wrong time, but on the other hand, maybe you can sometimes do it in sync by some probability, and then it may be less expensive. This is what they were trying to do, and this is mathematical scheme. This is again copied from their paper, and this is mathematical scheme how they try to address this. This is usual growth equation for population X is a vector of these components. Every component is how many individuals you have with certain phenotype. And then there is this matrix which corresponds to growth rate of these different phenotypes, and it depends on the environment. In different environments, you have different situations. Now, it's very easy to see that this equation you can transform into, you can formally write the solution in the form of exponential of this A matrix. And then what happens is, from time to time, you evolve the solution of this equation, and this involves the product of exponentials of these matrices. And you have different environments. The problem is these matrices do not commute. And that problem turns out to be very similar to what exists in polymer language. So as Feynman said in his lecture on electrostatic analogies, if you have the same equations, then you should expect the same solutions. So I was led by this idea, and I will try to explain to you what I mean by this equation. This equation for polymers looks indeed very similar to this one which Ido and Stan Leibler wrote for populations. Again, these Fs are growth rates for each population I, different populations I, and these populations can switch from one to another. Each phenotype can spontaneously switch with rate H from one phenotype to another. So I will now explain to you what this means.
So I is a
different
state
phenotype.
State of the population?
It's a state.
It's
not the state of it's, if you want, the state of individual, it's a phenotype. Each individual can be in different phenotype. And later I'll show to you.
So different individuals stochastically switching.
Yes.
Different times.
Yes, that's right. Yes. So here is a picture of the polymer, and now I am about to explain to you what this expression means.
Sure. Can I ask a question? I came in late, so maybe you already answered this, but. Why is the first term on the right linear there? Why isn't it, in general, a nonlinear function?
Here or here?
In the first equation.
In the second equation, this is a very relevant question, and I can tell you. In the first equation, in principle, I guess, it's possible if individuals eat each other or interact in some way, this would be nonlinear.
Like the logistic.
Like the logistic or something else. This I copied from the paper by Castle and Leibler. That's what they considered. They did not studied the logistics, they did not assume, I don't know, probably 10 years ago they didn't know that, that individuals in population can interact. No, seriously, I'm not sure why they did not consider.
But if that were nonlinear, then of course, by your analogy, the heteropolymer should be quadratic or higher.
Quad should be nonlinear too, and this has certain meaning too. Although whether the analogy will continue in that case is a very interesting and delicate question. So far, let me stay with linear approximation, and I will not say anything about nonlinearities. So what this equation means, I will tell you. Maybe I will start from the from this picture. So here is my polymer. Consists of different monomers. These balls here are monomers. And what happens is you can imagine that, for instance, these green units, green monomers, attract each other like this, while magenta monomers do not attract each other or maybe even repel each other. Or in simpler case, I will not consider that they interact with each other. I will just assume that there is some region in space, which is yellow region here, where green guys are attracted, while red guys are not attracted. They may be repelled from there. At least they are not attracted. Then you can expect that what will happen is your polymer will undergo some sort of, as it turns out, some sort of phase transition, and will adopt a certain peculiar conformation. So to describe this, what we can do is we can do the following. We can use this equation. So in this equation, this G is nothing else but the partition sum of a polymer of length T. T number of monomers is T. And this R is the distance between ends. Oops, sorry, wrong direction. So the distance between this point and this point will be R. Okay. And phi is potential field, external field, which depends on R. In my case, it is certain potential well when R sits inside the well and it is zero outside, for instance. And it depends also on alpha. Alpha denotes here the color of this monomer. Different monomers fill different fields in principle. Okay, now what is this Laplacian? Laplace operator. Laplace operator, Laplace operator tells you that if green monomer is presently located here, then next red monomer will be located roughly in this vicinity around green monomer. So that looks similar to somehow I am today in bad mood in terms of my buttons. I'm sorry. I will try to do better. So this term describes how polymer can go from one point R to the surrounding point Rs. And this term here describes how population, how individual organism can go from one phenotype I to another phenotype G. So R here, coordinate here, corresponds to the name of phenotype. And growth rate here, F, corresponds to the value of this field. So the value of field depends on R, which means the growth rate depends on the type of phenotype, on the individual name of the phenotype. And also growth rate or potential depends on alpha, which is type of monomer in polymer language and sort of environment in population language. And here, the object which is the subject of this equation is the number of individuals in population I, and here is a partition sum or Green function or statistical sum or whatever you want to call it of this polymer with certain number of monomers T and certain position of the head. So it's indeed the same thing, and we can therefore try to learn some wisdom from what is known about polymers. Now, as a side note, let me also mention that this polymer problem in turn can be mapped on wetting problem on a disorder substrate. I'm not sure people are interested in that, so I will be very quick. So imagine that this is a substrate, and substrate like this tabletop, you can imagine that this substrate is pattern like a chessboard, for instance, and some spots are hydrophilic, other hydrophobic, or something of that sort. And I show it here so these different colors correspond to different spots on this chessboard. Now you have some liquid. This brownish stuff is liquid, and it wets some parts of the surface and does not wet other parts. So you have some sort of a surface here. Now, if you imagine, for instance, this is one-dimensional problem, then this surface line is just like a polymer, which touches this surface in some places and doesn't touch in other places. So it's, again, the same problem. Interestingly, the polymer problem was first addressed in 1986, and the wetting problem was also addressed in 1986 with interval of, 2 months? Yes.
Are you assuming here that the probability of transition from one phenotype to another is equal throughout the polymer? So assume you're sampling randomly from the red and green balls in assembling your polymer, for example?
The sequence of red and green balls is the history at which external conditions change. The sequence of red and green balls is how this alpha depends on T, on the number of monomers. And it is the same as how this E, which is environment, depends on time. So this sequence is the history of how external conditions change for the population. Yes.
Is the small t the arc length along the polymer, and
yes,
the capital T is the total?
Capital T is temperature, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I should have said the temperature is 1 degree Kelvin, and then there would be no T. I'm sorry, it's just my history. I like to keep temperature. It makes me feel warm.
So have you de-dimensionalized these equations? Because to my mind, it looks like the coefficients have a very funny dimension then, because your field would have to have units of temperature divided by
In this case, T is unitless in the sense that it counts the number of monomers. Indeed, T here has units of seconds, and P here has some. So there is some funny factor, which is monomer size.
Okay, you can absorb it into.
Yes, I have absorbed it in definition of T here. Or I can reabsorb it in the definition of the external field. Okay, so specifically in this particular problem, if this yellow region is small enough, then this field phi divided by temperature T can be approximated as this delta function. And then the transition happens at this beta strength of the potential equals zero if dimension of the system is less than two and greater than zero if D greater than two. Probably not so interesting at this point. But here is an example which I think illustrates nicely the idea. So here is something that happens to heteropolymer and does not have any analogy with polymer which is homopolymer, which consists of identical units. So in this case, you should imagine that your, let's say, solvent consists of two coexisting phases, let's say oil and water, this green stuff and brownish stuff or orange stuff. And magenta monomers dissolve in green half space, and yellow monomers dissolve in this space, and then your polymer get attached to this interface. Home polymer will not do anything. It will be either dissolvable in one half or another half, but heteropolymer has the peculiarity that it will be absorbed in the middle. Now, this looks pretty artificial, and in this, instead of planar geometry, if it is spherical geometry, and yellow monomers are, in this case, quote-unquote, hydrophobic, and magenta monomers are hydrophilic, and this green stuff outside is water, then this is how I imagine protein. So, not so bad. So, in this case, we see that heteropolymer has peculiar localization transition. It gets localized at the interface. Now, what I want to say is that when we translate this to population language, there is this index I. What does it mean? So here is one peculiar example, what the type of phenotype may mean. It may simply mean age of the organism. So what happens if you have a cell and age of this cell is X? What can happen after some time delta T? What can happen to this cell? If nothing significant happens to this cell, then this cell becomes a little older. Its age becomes X plus delta T, and this is what will happen to all of us in this room after this talk. Unfortunately, I have to tell you, all of us will be 1 hour older. But for cells, of course, there is another possibility, which is to give birth to somebody and assume that this will not happen in this room. And there is, of course, the possibility to die. So in this case, what happens is this random walk, which is similar to polymer, sort of. It happens in the space of age. This coordinate along which our quote-unquote polymer moves back and forth is the age of the organism. So what happens is the trajectories here have very peculiar shape. It's at every step, you either go up at the angle of 45 degrees or whatever units you have along the axis, at the same angle, which means you become older. In delta T seconds, you become older by the time delta T, no choice. You do it like this. Or at some point, you can just go down. And then your age is zero, and then it grows again, and then zero, and so on. This is a random walk. Very peculiar random walk, very strange, asymmetric, and so on, but this is still a random walk. And depending on how specifically this happens, different statistics are possible. I don't want to go into that at this point. So you can think about it as random walk. So now the question is, the question that I want to address is whether it is useful to think about it as random walk, like the random walk of a Brownian particle, or it is better to think about it in terms of analogy with the polymer, because polymer, of course, itself, you can map it on the random walk of a Brownian particle. So what is more productive mapping? What is more productive analogy? And here, I want to discuss the following issue in this connection. So here we have Brownian particles, polymers, and population. For population, I didn't know what to draw, so I didn't draw anything. So when you have a Brownian particle, and this red thing represents an impermeable wall. So a Brownian particle undergoes some Brownian motion. At some point, it may hit the wall and gets reflected and keeps wandering around. The question is, what is the boundary condition at this wall? What is the boundary condition? Polymer can also wander around this wall, and it looks like it gets also reflected from the wall. So it seems, for the first side, that it should be the same boundary condition. In fact, it's very different boundary condition, and I will try to explain this point. I think it's very important point here. So here it is called reflecting boundary condition, in the sense that the flux of Brownian particles through the wall is zero. So you say that the flux is zero. Here, on the other hand, what happens is for your polymer to fluctuate close to the wall is very unfavorable. There are not many conformations available, and therefore polymer gets repelled from the wall from a distance. As a result, what happens is concentration of the polymer at the wall is zero. Not the derivative, but concentration itself. Another way to think about it is to say the following. If you think about your diffusion in terms of counting how many passes are there, you do sort of a pass integral for your diffusion, then all the trajectories which go to the other side of the wall, all the trajectories which go into prohibited space, they get reflected and go through the allowed space. That means in this region you have elevated concentration because all of your trajectories that wanted to go there get reflected and wander around here. On the other hand, here what happens is you have to count statistical weight. And statistical weight of all polymer conformations that go inside there is zero. They do not contribute, they are prohibited. That means the wall eats up statistical weight, which means it reduces entropy, which means it's unfavorable. It's all the same thing, same idea in different words. And this suggests that this is a very different boundary condition. So what is boundary condition for the population? I think, and correct me if I am wrong, I think that this is a polymer type boundary condition here, because, for instance, you can imagine that this axis, which is the phenotype, suppose it is H, simply H, and suppose that this impermeable wall is maximal H. Suppose that organisms are such that they cannot live longer than certain particular length of time. So then it is a prohibited region. You cannot go there. So the question is whether there is zero flux here or zero concentration. I would claim that there is zero concentration at this wall, because for The population, it is entropically unfavorable, and I'll explain to you later why I'm talking about entropically favorable and unfavorable for populations. It is entropically unfavorable to approach this world, just like for the polio. And I think it is an important point which I want to emphasize. So, to summarize, I think that this polymer mapping for population is more adequate than the mapping for random walks.
Sure, I have a question. Couldn't I give my Brownian particle a finite size, which would then also mimic concentration equals zero, because there would be an excluded zone, that is, the boundaries would actually have an effective shift because by that finite size.
I understand. If you, but then you will have to impose this reflecting boundary condition at an artificial surface, which is real surface plus whatever, one radius of your...
There would be another length. Yes, that's right. It would be like introducing an age,
yes.
some special age into your population.
Yes, it's possible, but still it will be reflecting boundary condition. While here I think it is an absorbing boundary condition. So this all suggests a view on population through this lineage perspective. So what it suggests is the following. We should look at the tree, which is like this, and for every organism here, there is whole set of all properties which are dictated by our polymeric analogy. First of all, there is energy. Energy is now quote-unquote energy. Not real energy, of course, but it is now mapped on the property on organism. Energy is in this analogy, the property of a particular organism. And it is determined by its entire history. It is not determined by the structure of the tree. It is determined by entire history of this particular individual. So you should look, therefore, at particular lineage, and from this you have to read out everything that happened to it during its entire time. And here is complete dictionary between everything for population and everything for the polymer. So one thing is, and I think we discussed it, but I will just repeat. The position along the chain is the analog of time. Position in space is the analog of phenotype, or age in simplest case. The sequence of different monomers is the sequence of different environments. External field is the reproduction rate. Green function or partition sum of this polymer is the population, is the number of organisms in a different for different phenotypes, and partition function is the same as total population size, and free energy for the polymer, which is log of partition sum, is the Lyapunov exponent, how population grows. Polymer conformation. What are the coordinates of every monomer number T is the organism history, which is its phenotype sigma sometime T ago. For every organism, you should look along its ancestral history and see sometime T ago, who was it? Presently, it's a tiger, and time to ago it was a crocodile, or I don't know who else. And another important quantity is molar density, and I will probably skip. So here is finally mapping. So for instance, if we think about this situation of a heteropolymer which is adsorbed on the interface, captured by the interface. So you can imagine that if you have many, many different phenotypes, which are shown here by the dots, and you have switching between different dots, switching between different phenotypes, which is similar to the switching between different places in this space, switching between different places in this space, and some of the phenotypes prefer one environment, some of them prefer the other environment, and then you obtain for your population similar transition. Your population gets captured to the type of phenotypes which are close to this boundary. And then there is very interesting estimate how many phenotypes you have to have. This number M, how frequently they should switch from one to another, H. H is the switching rate between one phenotype or to the other, how frequently you go from this place to this place, from this place to this place and back, and how frequently your environment changes, which is this tau, and F is the growth rate. So why there are such inequality? Inequality exists because on the one hand, your preference in energy between one type of monomers and the other type of monomers should be big enough to fight against entropy. If it's not big enough, you just forget about this solvability and you go randomly to different places. Also, overall space should be big enough such that you are not adsorbed to this boundary simply because there is no room to escape. So in polymer language, it's very easy and very obvious how to estimate all that. In population language, I do not know. My intuition is not good enough to derive such conditions. And here, such conditions are pretty obvious. So this is a prediction which I don't think was ever verified or falsified. I don't know, maybe it's interesting or not, but seems elegant to me. Okay, so a little more about this. Lineage view, which is a view on paths in H space, and that would be the end of this story, which is very short, which is good. So I told you already that this is a peculiar random walk. I did not impose maximal H here. There is no maximal H. And here is what we were able to extract from this polymeric thinking. For this particular model. So the results here will be formulated in terms of this Malthus parameter M, which is the overall growth rate of the population. And this is not our equation, although we can derive this equation by our machinery too. I will just walk you through what is this. So M is total growth rate of the population given that it has the following properties. B of X is the rate of parenting at age X. Okay, so for us, B of X is zero before the age of 10 years and zero after the age of 100 years, something like this. So Z of X is the number of offspring at age X, and L of X is the probability to live until age X. So you combine all of that together, and this is k of x, and then this k of x, this is equation from which you can find your growth rate. And this is not our result. But let us consider a very simple, naive example. So suppose that all organisms never die. The probability to live until any age is 1. If you are born, good for you. And at any age, you have the probability to give birth to somebody else, which is B, and which also does not depend on age. But the number of offspring at age X is distributed. So at the beginning, number of offspring is very small when you're very young, then it reaches maximum and goes down. And sigma is the width of this thing, and tau is the average age. Okay, so then for this particular case, it's a matter of simple algebra to solve this equation and to find Malthus parameter m and to see what happens. And here is this formula where z total is this number. So far it's not particularly exciting, but let's consider what it means. What this total growth rate, this is growth rate of the population, how fast it grows. Let's consider some explanation of it. I am tempted to say let's analyze physical meaning of it, but for you probably it's not physical meaning, but I don't know if I should say if biology has any meaning, but probably it does. But in any case, so how does population grow with this particular growth rate? One idea, very naive idea, would be to organize life such that everyone gives birth to new organisms at the most productive age of tau. Okay, then how you grow? This quantity z of x is maximal, z star, and then you have t over tau populations during tau t time t, and then your growth rate is like this. Okay, but this is a greater quantity. You can very easily check the algebra and see that this is a greater quantity. So population grows faster. How does it do it? How can it exploit the fact that this is a white curve to grow faster?
Sure, I'm confused by the z. Z is not the total number of offspring. It's the number of offspring that...
It is the number of offspring at age X. At age X.
How can it go down? Once you have offspring, then...
No. If you give birth, if you are 30 years old and give birth to new organisms, then you produce z of 30 years of new organisms. If after that, at the age of 50, you want to give birth to another set of organisms, then you produce z of 50. Is that clear?
The integral of that is a sigmoidal function. Is that what you're saying?
No. There is no point of integral.
Well, why is the number of offspring? Once I have offspring at age 30, then I have them?
Yes, of course. But the number of offspring that you...
Not the cumulative.
But
how is that independent from the birth rate?
Because you have a litter.
You have a litter. You produce.
That's the size of the litter.
Yes.
Okay. Litter size.
Yes, if you want.
Okay.
Okay. So this way, population obviously does something better than just producing optimal biggest litters. One idea how to do better is to give birth a little before, produce these litters a little before the optimal age. Then you lose a little bit on Z, you have small litter, but you have more generations. During given time, you have more generations because you do it faster. Then you obtain a little bit bigger growth rate, but still not big enough. Still, the solution suggests that it should be even bigger. So how does it happen? It happens because there is this entropy of lineages. Because there are different ways and different organisms go through different tricks, and you have to do the summation over all possible tricks. So when you take into account that this situation, then actual distribution of ages is not this blue curve Z, but this red curve. It is not a delta function. Yes, they do exploit the idea to give birth before the maximum, but they also exploit the idea to explore the whole, entropically explore all the possibilities. And then you get this, you obtain this result.
How much better is this than the optimized delta function?
How much into?
But is this incremental gain?
Yes.
Not,
it's better.
But the estimate that you got from the optimal delta function is.
I don't do numbers here, so it's a matter of mathematical inequality. It's better, since it sits in the exponential. Better means better, and I don't have anything to say. How much better it is, I don't know. But the point is, this.
Let me say it's better by a geometric coefficient. The scaling with all the parameters would be the same for the optimal delta function versus the complete age distribution, given all the other parameters of the problem.
I do not think so, because here optimal age, optimal delta function gives you this result. And this is exact result, so I'm not sure.
Okay, so
in principle, it's a different function.
Yeah.
Just in terms of scaling, it does not look very simple, so I don't know about scaling. Okay, so this is basically it, and this is my message to you, that this entropy which is hidden in lineages and which is mappable to polymer problem and predicts things like this entropic widening of the distribution and localization transition, it is there.
Did you explore delta oscillating delta functions where, one generation will give birth at the peak and one will give birth earlier and they oscillate between those? Would that give an intermediate result or one that would be?
We did not explore it. I don't know, but we have mathematical statement that this is the optimal strategy. Mathematically, this is optimal strategy. So, unless our theorem somehow is mistaken. Okay, so now the predictions of this mathematical machinery were tested by our co-author, and I'm sorry, it's embarrassing, I forgot his last name. His
Wakamoto.
Wakamoto, yeah, Yuichi Wakamoto. I'm sorry. So those are real lineage data for some bacteria which he observed, and by studying, carefully studying the lineage histories, he measured all these polymer properties, such as energy and so on, and produced some data. And here are cell cycle distribution and age distribution and so on. And so this is fitted, and this is the prediction of the theory and data, and it looks relatively good to me. And Ido tells me that he produced now much more of this data, which fit even better. But this is not the point of my talk. So my point is to emphasize this theoretical mapping idea. So this is it. And thank you very much for your attention.
Restricted the confined volume.
Yes.
You said you didn't know what the analogous quantity would be for the growth rate problem.
Yes.
Okay. So it could be some.
Restricted volume in this case for populations.
Yeah,
I understand. Yeah, restricted volume would be restricted number of different phenotypes. It will be restricted number of different phenotypes. If phenotype is age, then one way to restrict volume is to impose maximum age. Yes. Thank you. Yes.
Maybe you better understand this. So here it's a lineage of single cells, or it's a lineage?
Oh, of course, it's not single cell. Single cell would be every point at the right is a cell.
Yes.
So, for instance, this is one cell, and this is another cell. And
within a population, cells that have different, different cell cycle distribution times.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you give
starting the single cells over on the left here. Each lineage is a single cell, and you're following the birth rate as they move.
Yes.
The
you have one cell which lives and does not divide until this moment. Then it divides, and then, my eyes are not good enough to distinguish all these lines, but the idea is every line that starts on the left side is one cell.
Yeah.
And then this is time in minutes. And so, for instance, this line, at about half an hour, you register first division. Then keeps on dividing kids.
So how many you have a matrix of phenotypes, and so here, how many, say?
In this experiment, there are no phenotypes. In this case, the only phenotype is age. Only indication of phenotype is age, nothing else. So to make sure, my talk had two parts. One is about phenotypes in general, and another one is implementation of this idea when phenotype is characterized by age. So in the first case, it's very abstract random walk or polymer walk in the space of phenotypes. In the second case, it is very less abstract but very peculiar, squeezed, asymmetric, and so on, polymer walk in the space of ages.
Glucose and lactose refer to the environment conditions?
Yes, but they are not switching randomly.
Okay.
It's just two different experiments.
So how would I implement environmental constraints in your theory that go beyond, let's say?
What do you mean environmental constraint?
Constraints on overall nutrients
for instance, or constraints imposed between, let's say, interactions between the phenotypes, or, I mean, there's a variety of things one could do. Space constraints, things
in spatial time. I agree, there is lots of things to do and lots of interesting things to do. For instance, there is this, in formal theory, there is switching rate between different phenotypes. So, are these switching rates large or small? Are they themselves subject of evolution? What they mean? This is all behind this model, and of course, those are all very interesting questions. In particular, the switching rates in polymer language mean how polymer switches from one place to another in space. If your monomer is here, how probable it is for the next monomer to be here, 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 in different places. And in polymer language, we know that there are, apart from characteristic length, how far next monomer would be from the previous one, there are things like orientational preference. There are things like symmetry of this probability, whether you go from here to here or from here to there, whether it's symmetric or not. All of these questions exist for populations, and I do not know the answers to this. And there are many, many things to explore, and there are many beautiful effects which I can, from polymer perspective, I can immediately tell you what the effect is, and I can even translate it to polymer language using this dictionary, to population language using this dictionary. Whether this is an interesting effect for populations or not, I'm not in position to judge, but there are many interesting effects like that. It's the whole world.
What would be the analog of, say, a theta point type of transition?
The polymers that I'm talking about here are polymers which live in external fields, these phi external fields, but they do not feel themselves. So if different monomers start to interact to each other, that would mean for population some interaction between populations at different times. I do not know if that has much meaning or not in population language.
It happens via the genes.
Okay.
Different times or different ages?
Times.
Different times. So, for instance, maybe I don't know, but you probably know better than I do. So explain what you mean.
Well, so this is, again, Stan Lavender wrote a presentation about selection and variation operating like a Kalman filter. You measure instantaneous conditions, but you also have some historical memory through the genes that you carry that are being selected from your ancestry.
Okay.
And that somehow would capture it.
Okay. So here we are.
You mean the transcripts?
No, I mean just the impact of selection in a previous previous epoch.
Influence on generation time, or influence on
short-term culture, right? There's no matter.
No, but that can also be folded.
Of course, yeah. It can be applied there, yes, I agree. So, thank you very much. I think it's a good trick for the speaker to force audience to reply to the questions.
Okay, you win.